I always have a great time when I come to New York. Thank you to Dennis Falcone, who is the guy who runs the board here on this end. Always great back in L.A. with Jesse and Jason and Gina and whoever else is in charge of things on that side. But when you're on the road, nice to be able to count on somebody like Dennis. So thank you again. And everybody at Premier Radio Networks New York to make this such an easy show to do. Having such a great time. And we'll go to open lines for this last hour. We gave you all the numbers where you want to take us. You've got an hour to spend. It's your chance to grab a line on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's get to open lines, and if you want to, go ahead and grab one. If you don't know the numbers, you can go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, where there's just some terrific stories. Mentioned them in the first hour. You might want to go back and listen to Andrew Gause, and he's always a lot of fun, even when the story is that the economy for 2011 is showing all sorts of signs of recovery. Nice to have somebody like Andy on the watch to look for the things they're not telling us. That was in the first couple of hours on Coast to Coast. It's right there for you on the Coast Insider, which you can sign up for, too, at the website, coasttocoastam.com. Let's go wildcard line. Blair in Sedona has been hanging on the longest on Coast to Coast. Blair, open lines.
Hi, Ian.
Hey.
Hey, C-SPAN's Brian Lamb had an interview late last year that, you know, highlighted some of the major differences between American and British governmental functions, especially how the British Treasury is much more powerful in fiscal matters than their counterparts at the United States Treasury. So, Ian, I guess this is a rhetorical question, or if you can answer, that'd be cool. Is it fair to say fractionalized banking, as currently represented by the Federal Reserve, was a nominal success when the USA was innovating and manufacturing? Yet, now in 2011, with basically a service industry and money movers replacing manufacturing and also getting busted, I might say, playing casino-like games of profit, may a better mode lie in the way the British Treasury operates?
I was just seeing a report the other day about how the Brits are very much in trouble. So I guess I'm trying to reconcile what you're saying with what I just saw that said they're in for some real rough years ahead still, that they haven't been through the recovery yet, the shakedown that we have. So how is it that they're in so much better shape?
That's a good point, too, because Mr. Ferguson did say the loss of value of currency blame goes to central bank or government deliberately inflating the currency. And so we have both the central bank being private or a government. It still doesn't matter. It almost sounds like we need to go into trade and barter again for a while to ease into a transition.
Well, I appreciate that thought. I hope that works out. Blair and Sedona, thank you. Let's move on. I will say, by the way, I mean, his point about the service economy is really true, but everything's a trade-off. And that's what Andy Gause was saying in the first couple of hours, too. We can go back to manufacturing here. Love that. Love the idea of putting more people back to work. But then there's also going to be a trade-off on the expense of those products on the other end, which still may not be a bad idea. All right. I lost out. Who's east of the Rockies in Ohio? John is in Ohio on Coast to Coast. John?
Hi, Ian.
Nate.
Great programs tonight. Very interesting.
We try hard to try to make one original every night. So thank you.
Yeah. The one common thread I think that mankind has running through it, whether you're talking about the British or the Americans, is that when stomachs are empty and, you know, your sustenance is threatened, that leads to things. And I guess what I'm wondering and what I was thinking in the first 3 hours was that, you know, why shouldn't this situation over here actually wind up something similar to what we're seeing in Egypt, or maybe worse?
Why won't it? You're saying, what are these circumstances? How could we from here, how could we end up like in Egypt?
Well, yeah, you know, to me, it's a great possibility that it will wind up that way. Because
why do you think it's a great possibility as opposed to a remote possibility?
Because to me, it seems like this situation is spiraling out of control. Now they're not funding pensions, you know. And again, going back to the premise that when people's incomes are threatened and they're hungry, that leads to things. And I'm just sounding the warning alarm that you know, this, and for example, the states, you know, if you have a state that's fiscally sound, that's being robbed by the states that have been fiscally unresponsible, well, to me, that's a formula for civil war.
Well, I see your point theoretically. I mean, I think that's always a possibility, but you say great possibility and you make it seem like a real likelihood. I think it's an absolute far remote possibility because there's no money in chaos. You know, everybody loses in anarchy except for a very few. And I think most people wouldn't see it to their own benefit. I mean, if we just follow the, you know, just the basic pleasure principle, there's nothing that says this will benefit you. Like, what would, I'll turn around and ask you, John in Ohio, what would take you out into the streets with a gun, willing to shoot strangers, willing to shoot at police, willing to shoot at the Ohio National Guard? What would it take for you to do that?
If my property was threatened.
Okay, so how would they threaten your property? Just so I get an idea of what you're...
I believe earlier in the evening, your guest had indicated that's a way that the states could balance their budgets.
They could jack up your property tax and say, you've got to pay this much for your property or sell it.
Plus, I think if we replayed it, you know, basically he was talking about property takeovers.
Well, we're talking about a lot of cases. It wasn't property takeovers. It was just we're going to tax you into a place where your property may not have much value because who would come in and buy it if you had a beautiful mansion? So that's what I'm trying to understand vis-a-vis your assumption that we stand, you know, ever close to something like Egypt. So they come in and they say, now your property tax is going to be 30%. Where would you take your gun? What would you do?
Me personally, I mean, you know, as far as me personally, I wouldn't move to something like that. But what I'm saying is that there are people that might.
Okay. But see, I think that's the great difference. There are people that might, perhaps. There will always be people who will, because there's a hurricane, will take that opportunity to throw a chair through a window of a electronics store and rip off a TV. There are always people that might try to do something like that, and they want a riot. You know, their team wins the Stanley Cup, and their first thing is, I'm going to go burn a car. I mean, there are people that might, no doubt. But I think we're so far away from Germany because I think we forget the layers and the levels of our security and how close under a 30-year regime like Mubarak. I mean, 30 years in power. And people just, bottom line, they want him out. And they want him out because things aren't better. And they can, you know, he's not interested in giving them what they want. He's interested in giving them his son and saying, here is your new leader. And they're flexing their muscle. And maybe if we had the same president for 30 years or 25 years, maybe even a third term president who invoked some sort of national security claim to, you know, remain in office, we would see this type of fighting on the streets. But I don't know, just because somebody's going to lose their pension or other people, you know, don't get the retirement deal that they thought they were going to get. I would be very surprised if they ended up in the turnover of a country like in Egypt. But I've been wrong before from time to time. West of the Rockies, David is in Spokane on Coast to Coast. David?
Yes, Ian. I'd like to point out something very interesting that the national media hasn't seen at all, and that is the transfer of wealth from the middle class and the poor in the middle class to major corporations. It's a scheme that's very clever, and that is, as you know, that the last two wars we've had, we haven't paid for, and usually every every time the United States has had a war, we've gotten together and we've paid for the war. And nowadays, the last two wars, we haven't, and we didn't pass, and we didn't pay for the Medicaid, prescription drug bill, which was a $1 trillion bill, too. And so we had these, you add these up, these trillions of dollars that is not paid for. Well, now when it's coming due, when we have this giant deficit that's coming due, what they're talking about is reducing all the programs that help the middle class and the poor, the Medicaid, the Social Security. And so what it's doing indirectly, it's having the poor and the middle class paying for something that should have been paid for in the first place.
Yep.
And they knew this. I mean, the people that didn't pay for these and borrow this, they knew all this stuff.
Yep.
And that's what kind of gets me, is that the people in the United States, the media, isn't pointing these things out, how it's transferring wealth.
I'll disagree with you. I see that report all the time. I'm not sure when you say the media, you know, that wears on me a little bit, because media is in every form. The internet is the media.
Well, I just watch the national news. You know,
the national news reports that, has been reporting that. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they're not reporting it every night. They're not running around going, oh my God. But they've reported that a bunch of times.
And I wanted, then
so what? I mean, then what? People have to act on it, you know. And they can report it as many times as they want, but if people don't do anything, so what?
I also wanted to point out another very interesting thing that's never brought up. When I was in school, like 30 years ago at the university, we were studying. The teacher was talking to us about Social Security. And how basically it started out, it's sort of like a savings account. Everybody sort of had a savings account, and money was put in there. And then the government, I think it was under Lyndon Baines Johnson, changed the Social Security. And what he did was the politicians got their hand in the cookie jar, and they used all the money in the Social Security Fund to pay for the Great Society and the Vietnam War and all this
stuff. Why do you think that's not reported? Why do you say that's never brought up?
I've never
heard fascinated
of
it. By that idea. Well, where did you get it?
I got this when I was at the university.
Okay, and so it came to you where? Because, I mean, I see this stuff on television all the time. There are 15 news channels out there. There are a million magazine shows.
No, what they're talking about in the media is that Social Security is basically the people paying in are paying for the people that are on Social Security. And they're saying how this is the way the system is. Well, what I'm saying was it never used to be that way.
I think that's fair enough. Well, I appreciate that. I guess I don't, and we'll just disagree on this idea that something never gets brought up. How many times can they bring it up before nobody cares? And you can bring up something, you can do a story on it, you can do whatever, but it can't be brought up every night. It can't, there's no 24-hour channel for historic news. And so I think the challenge is on to you. Don't wait for the media to do it. You go do it. If you don't think that's being reported enough, or you think, make a YouTube video of that. Hell, there's some of these YouTube videos get 10 times the number of spins that viewers are than a network newscast is getting viewers. You might as well just go do it yourself. You can reach more people by doing that than waiting for ABC, NPR, anybody doing that story again. Because once they've done it a couple of times, they're on to whatever the new thing is. I mean, they got Charlie Sheen to talk about, for God's sakes. All right, so let's get on to our next caller. Let's see. This is Taylor in Denton, Texas. First-time caller line on Coast to Coast. Taylor?
Hey, Ian, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Where are you with the it's open lines? We don't have to talk about the economy. You can go anywhere you want.
Well, no, I know that. The guy, Alex, that you had on earlier, is that what his name was, with the when money dies or whatever?
Oh, Adam Ferguson.
Adam, that's right. I got a couple of questions for you. My first question is this, do you think that if we went back to a bartering system that it would work, or maybe going back, going to a gold standard?
Gold standard's never going to happen again. The gold standard that we might as well be talking about, you know, going back to biblical currency. It's just not going to happen. We have the U.S. dollar, and our U.S. dollar is not tied to the gold standard because it was
no
believed.
There's no gold in Fort Knox, right?
No, it was believed that there was that you could expand the economy and more people would make more money if you disconnected it to the gold standard. That was the belief. Wrong or right, that was the idea that the economy has expanded since we took the money off the gold standard. But so that's we're never going to be able to go back to that. But now your question about barter, what's stopping you from bartering?
Well, well, there's really nothing stopping me from bartering. I trade stuff with my friends all the time, you know, and they get, you know, I'll get good deals, you know, out of it. I'm a musician and I like to trade, you know, music equipment and stuff like that. And
there you go.
I'll trade in an old keyboard and get a better one, you know, and not have to pay any money for it.
There you go. And I think that this system is available to all of us right now. I think that for people that want to go to a barter system, I'm so for it. And it's easy enough. It's just you got to start creating the network that this would work in. It can't be a government-created barter system or we're going to be right back to where we are. And if you know, 20 people decide they're going to barter for the things they need, they'll find a way to work it out. But you just got to find the 20 people who are on board with, I don't want to spend my money, but I'm willing to shovel your walk if you come over and you dig my garden or however, you know, you paint my house and I'll fix your car. And you just got to find enough people in there that have the goods and services that they're willing to trade for with other people that they may or may not know.
Sure. So, and it would be more of like a word of mouth thing or something like that, where it just gets around. You've got, you know, people see that you've got certain things that they want and they have certain things that you want.
Well, word of mouth, let's use the internet. Let's use the internet. Let's create, I mean, you don't have to even, you could just set up a chat room right now and try and find 20 people in your neighborhood. I don't know if you can do that on Craigslist. You can do that in a lot of places and just create your own barter economy around you. Enough Americans do it. It'll happen. It'll be organic. You know, we'll never live in a time where you'll see legislation passed that says from now on in the state of South Dakota, we will go to a barter system. It's not going to happen. And I don't want the government to declare that by fiat either. You know, that won't be tied to the gold standard. That won't, you know, that there's nothing that will mark that be sort of an objective, you know, mark of what a good or service is valued at. It'll only be what you're willing to pay. What are you willing to trade for it? That's how much it'll be worth. And could we ever get to a time where you could buy a home on the barter system? That would be interesting. Are there home builders somewhere that are willing to say, you know what, you come and build X number of homes for me and I will build you a house. You'll get a house. Could that happen someday? Guess so. But it's got to start with people who want to do it and are going to do it at a grassroots level. At least that's how I see it. Do we have time for Joe on a wild card line? Okay, Joe, real quickly, Long Beach on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Hey, Ian, how you doing, brother?
Good. Let's get it to the next half hour cranking. Where are you going to take us real quick?
I'm going to tell you that these bankers are charging interest on this money. Okay. That's the practice of usury. Okay.
Yep.
And in this country, which is a Judeo-Christian country, that's a mortal sin. That practice should not be allowed to charge interest on money. If you go to Saudi Arabia or the Middle East countries over there, you borrow $100,000. That's all you pay back. They don't charge interest because it's against the law. It's against the laws of God. Okay. Where is the church? Where is the church on that, brother? Tell me.
Well, I'll tell you. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Said, hey, babe, I'll take a walk anywhere. That's what I've been enjoying. I mentioned it earlier in the evening on Coast to Coast that finally, after 6 weeks of not being able to walk, I took my first steps on Thursday with a specially made ankle brace and a cane. But hey, walking's walking. The first thing I did was get on a plane. I got a lot of wheelchair help, you know, The second you get into the airport, you get in the wheelchair and the whole bit, and you get whisked off to the plane, and I'll take that because it's just fun to be anywhere other than that room I was in for 6 weeks and the occasional doctor visit. Thank you again to Dean for fitting that brace for me. He's a coastie, as well as Gianna, who did such a nice job getting me ready for that. So back to Joe's question, okay? So Joe called from Long Beach. And he, in touting the virtues of Islam, he said that they don't charge interest rates. So, the Christians do. Supposedly, we live in this Judeo-Christian country, and yet there are interest rates. Well, I'll respond to Joe in many ways here, and I think I can substantiate every single comment I'm going to make. If it turns into further comments, you're certainly welcome to. We have a little bit more time on open lines. But the first point is Saudi Arabia is a theocracy and we're not. So we have a secular government. Now, people who are Christians or Jews can decide whether or not they want to loan or borrow money at interest rates. So again, when we say the country is not a Christian government. It may be a government that's densely populated by Christians and or Jews, but it is not a theocracy, and I'm glad for that. We know that there's a lot of deception in that claim that there are no interest rates charged under Sharia, right, underneath in Muslim law. No, you cannot charge an interest rate. That's exactly true. And the banks in the Muslim world generally won't charge you an interest rate. That's true, too. They'll charge you a profit rate. Same thing, different name, right? That's a nice, it's like saying it's not a tax, it's a fee. So you can get around saying I did not raise taxes, I raised fees. Still a tax. It's the same purpose as served in Muslim law. You cannot charge an interest rate, but there's nothing that prevents you from making a profit off a loan. So you simply say, I will loan you $10,000 for that car. And you borrow $10,000 for that car. And when you pay it back, you pay back the $10,000 with no interest, except for the previously agreed upon profit rate of, say, $1,000. So when you pay back that loan, you pay back the profit rate, too. Same deal. And to make, to flesh out the point on the whole Judeo-Christian thing, remember, this is what the Christians used the Jews for years. Under the Holy Roman Empire and other places, for example, Italy is a good example. The Christian church said it is wrong for us to charge a usury rate. So let's bring in the Jews to do it for us. And the feeling anyway, at least amongst some people at the time, hideously, was since their souls are lost anyway, since they're not Christian, we don't care. They can do that. Our hands will remain clean. Let their hands be dirty, and yet we will profit from it. So I'll just say it's really easy to talk about interest rates like that in a theological sense. It's much harder to actually live it. And whether we call it an interest rate or a profit rate or whether we're having somebody else do it for us or we do it, I think it's just better to be honest. And I'll take the virtue of honesty. And in this case, let's just call it what it is. It's an interest rate. And let's just, instead of asking other people to do it for us, we'll just do it ourselves. And if you want to do it, don't. If you want to do it, do. If you don't, don't. And I think that's where we all have to make, the decision for ourselves. How are we going to live by our religious principles? And I'd rather just not be in debt. So I try not to be in debt to anybody. And if I lend money to somebody, I lend it to them without interest. That's how I do it. And to me, that's living up to the religious obligation. How the banks do it, that'll be up to the banks. We'll leave it up to there. We'll get to your open line calls coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's just rack them up. Start from the beginning. Wild card one's been on the longest. Steve is in Albany on Coast to Coast. Steve?
Hey, Ian. It's Steve, the taxi driver from Albany.
Oh, good. Good to talk to you again.
One time to... Yeah, you don't know this, but about 3 years ago, I went through what you did with your leg.
Oh,
I got hit by a car.
Oh, gosh.
I got three plates in my leg.
Oh, well, that's worse than me, and I'm sure it was twice as painful, but gosh, it was a lot. So great. So,
cabinet in my head.
open lines, where are you going to take us?
Okay. I have figured out something which, you know, is like, I don't understand how anybody could have avoided this. Okay. I think I know where the space program has gone that we don't see. Okay.
Okay.
And the thing is, okay, we went, we gathered rocks, we left, and we never went back. I think the rocks that we got were filled with helium-3. They got enough helium-3 to fly one large space mission up there to get even more rocks. You see what I'm saying? And so basically, we don't see, okay, this is the reason why they canceled the Apollo program. They didn't have to send any more missions like that to the moon because they got what they wanted. They got enough fuel to power a larger spacecraft in the Black Ops program.
Hmm.
This fills in all the voids that George Norrie talks about and everybody else speculates.
Well, tell me about the helium-3 and the rocks. I don't know enough about the chemistry of moon rocks to know whether that's valid or not.
Okay. Well, okay, hydrogen to deuterium, okay, is, okay, as you know, as an isotope, okay.
Here's what I need to know. Steve, I just need to know.
Yeah.
So you know for a fact that helium-3 is in moon rocks?
Yeah, that's a given.
Okay. All right, that's cool.
That's a given.
All right, well, that's... And I don't know enough to say whether you're right or you're wrong, and I'll just leave it there because that's interesting and let other people sort that out. Okay, I get that. I get that. I appreciate that. Well, it's an interesting speculation, and I'll move on to Jeremiah in Colorado because there's so many people that want to get on for open lines. He's also on a wild card on Coast to Coast. Jeremiah?
Hey, thanks for having me there, Ian.
Good. Glad to have you. Go ahead.
I just want to say that we had a previous caller that called in and talked about a lot of these corporations are taking advantage of smaller people. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And anyway, there's a prediction by President Lincoln back in November 21st, back in 1864, and he wrote a letter to one of his colonels. And I'd like to read this to you and to all the coasties out there by name.
Okay.
It says, I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. As a result of war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudice of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. I feel at this moment anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before. Now, if that doesn't tell you something, what does?
Fair enough. And how do you know that letter is true?
Well, I believe because they said that when he wrote this letter, he wrote that he had a dream, and he wrote what was on his dream.
Right.
And just like they say about Nostradamus' predictions, you know, they said that maybe it was around his time or whatever.
Right.
But then he doesn't know.
You know, the only reason I say that is because I had heard that quote before. Somebody sent it to me in email, and so I looked it up once, and I looked it up again while you brought it up here. And just so you know, this warning, this prophecy about the future from Abraham Lincoln is listed as false at Snopes.com, that it's a hoax. Now, I'm not saying the sentiment's not right. But it says here those words did not originate with Abraham Lincoln. They appear in none of his collected writings or speeches. 20 years after his death, they started popping up. But people have said that was a made up quote in order to bring credence to a claim that somebody else was making. I'm not saying it's not right, because I think the sentiment of it is something with which I agree. I just thought I'd pass along to you that it may not be Lincoln that said it. It may have been somebody said it and put Lincoln's name to it. But there's a long tradition of that in this country, and it doesn't mean that the wisdom of that doesn't turn out to be right. Let's go wild card line. Lee is in North Dakota, Nodak, on Coast to Coast. Lee?
Yep. How are you doing there?
Good. I hope you heard in the first hour Andrew Gause citing North Dakota as the exemplary state for states that have their financial house in order.
Yes, sir. And I also noticed a lot of people move here from other states.
It's because of the weather.
Interesting.
It's because of the weather.
40 degrees below zero. Awesome. Well, you
know, I know. But it's a dry cold, you know, as we're fond of saying. It's a dry cold. But, you know, the funny thing about Nodak is you can get, I mean, you really can get a great deal on property. And if you want to live someplace and not pay a lot for the property or the house, there's still some great bargains in North Dakota. Yes?
Well, yeah, unless it's oil land.
That's true, and people are finding that out. Well, it's open lines. I'm trying to get everybody on. Where can you take us?
Yes, I'm a Native American, and we still use quite a bit of the barter system.
I would imagine. Yeah.
I'm a Lakota or Sioux, but anyways, we use a lot of the barter system down there, and it seems to work out fine, except for, like, gasoline and stuff like that. We really can't do it with that, but for all the other stuff, the barter system works out pretty good.
I agree. And there are lots of reservations where people do that, where they barter their cash for poker chips, which is also very, very yes, popular to do on some reservations in Minnesota. So thank you. Fair point, though. And I really do believe in that, that it's really easy to do that. You get a group together. You can all decide. You don't have to wait for somebody else to give you permission. Just start bartering. You just got to organize it. Don't wait for somebody to organize it for you. West of the Rockies, Donald is in Idaho on Coast to Coast. Donald?
Hello. I'm so glad to talk to you. I would just love to be in the back room with you guys debating all these issues. But I've got a couple of ideas here. And one of them is, I'm not really up on my sources. I read so much, I lose track of where I see it. But I'd seen that they claimed that it's about Fort Knox, that it isn't that it's empty. It's that there's no United States of America gold in there.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that too. Right. It's all full of everybody else's gold.
Yeah. Rockefellers and Rothschilds and so on.
I don't even know, but I've heard just foreign countries. I don't know about Rockefellers or Rothschilds. I don't know that. The question is how many foreign governments keep their gold there? And whether or not we've got more of other countries' gold than we have of our own. And we're not allowed to know, which I hate, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I wish we did know.
It'll always be hidden as best as they can hide it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ed, one other quick point.
And then the other one was I had always been kind of studying into the ancient astronaut theory, and I finally got to read the 12th Planet by Zacharias Hitchin. And then just after reading that and hearing your shows, it just everything seems to fall into place and tells the story.
Yep, it's a classic, and we're all looking for that day when one way or another that'll either be proven totally true or not. But I think it's definitely worth talking about. In the meantime, thanks for jumping in. Wildcard 3, Sharon is in California on Coast to Coast. Sharon?
Hey, Ian. Our local community college has the answer to what happens when the money dies.
What's that?
They have a new course, just got a pamphlet, and it's how to get a job in another country.
Ah,
no joke.
Weird. Weird.
No joke.
Weird. I guess that makes sense. If you can't find one there, where else can you go?
But
it's strange to think.
Who plans the courses at community colleges? That's a government thing, right?
Yeah, but I would imagine it's a fairly local thing based on who they think will take those courses.
Oh, right? Assure you that our county has no jobs.
Right. So that's why they're offering that there. Oh, well, that's really sad. Yeah, I'd hate to think that that's true, that the only place left is to leave. How about other states? Why don't they offer that? How to apply for jobs in other states. Why do you do that before you start sending him overseas? Interesting. Thank you. Wildcard 2. Frank is also in California. He's in Sacramento on Coast to Coast. We might be able to get everybody in before the top of the hour. Frank?
Hey, Ian. Back in 1991, 92, 93, there was a company, and I can't remember the name, but they tried to do a barter system. They had some tricky name like Web MyTex or MyBill or something or other, and then you would put up your service, and other people would put up their service, and then you would actually have such an, you know, MyTex bills, and you would have these accounts, and then you would, you know, like say I was a massage therapist, and somebody would want their house cleaned,
right?
You know, or you know, somebody might offer me a house cleaning for a massage, but it seemed to be pretty inequitable. You know, there was like, you know, the body shop really wanted to make more money than they wanted to, or everybody really wanted to make more cash. They wanted to give away their service. You understand?
Yeah, so, I do. I think that again speaks to the fact that it's got to be grassroots. It anytime you got sort of, you create a top down system, or even maybe even try to organize it more than it can be, because I know many people that do barter all week long. I mean, they don't do it for every single purchase, but they do it a lot. And a lot of them are musicians. A lot of them are people. A lot of them are photographers that offer a valuable service for a wedding or, you know, for some special occasion. And they're able to turn that around into something that they need. So, yeah, I think that's, again, good to know that it's failed before. Maybe we can learn from what they did right or wrong. And I think that leaves us just barely enough time for Al, first-time caller line in L.A. to finish the California trifecta on Coast to Coast. Al?
Hey, Ian. Glad to talk to you tonight. I have a couple of things. I was just thinking that the Egyptian writing, since we could possibly be under one corporate world order, that could all be engineered by the powers that be, using everyone as pawns to increase prices all over the world. And the other, the other thing is, I'll just only say two of my five things. The other thing is that we are really one world, and we are really one people. And I think all the people need to stop saying, oh, China this, oh, Iraq that, oh, Iran this, oh, Russia that, because we're all breathing the same air and eating the same food. And I think if somehow we could just cooperate with each other, everyone could get fed, everyone could get clothed, because we spend so much money and time killing each other.
Well, that's always true. And I don't know about the one food thing. I watch a lot of Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern, and I'm glad we're not all eating the same foods. Or at least the same parts of the same foods. Anyway. But the rest of your point is well taken. Kumbaya. And I hope everybody stays warm this week somehow, wherever you are. Got some great shows coming up this week on Coast to Coast. Great stories waiting for you. CoastToCoastAM.com. Deus te amat, and I do too.